Hello, welcome to the Life in Brown podcast. My name is Motorayo and today's episode is with Aiwanose Odafen, who is the author of Tomorrow I Become a Woman. This is her debut novel and we talk about what inspired her to write this book. And we also talk about how she's transitioned from working in accounting and consulting to working as a full-time writer. And she talks about how her transition has been received by her parents, by her family. And we also in this episode get into like the value of reading fiction, and she shares advice for creatives and authors about sharing your work online and in other spaces. And she talks about what she's working on next. I really enjoyed my conversation with Aiwanose. Her book is probably one of the best novels I've read this year. It covers a lot of feminist themes, I think, and it sparks a lot of conversation about the way women are treated in society, particularly also in Nigerian society. And I think her book is so important. And I think after listening to my conversation with Aiwanose, I think you're going to want to pick up her book and read it, because I feel it's such an important novel and everyone should read it. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Aiwanose. Hi, Aiwa. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tomorrow. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And it's so good to speak to you about your book. And I want to talk to you about like your writing and your book. First, I have to say that your book, I found it like before. I hadn't seen it on Bookstagram. I found it in a bookshop. And then after that, I started seeing it on Instagram a lot. So yeah. So I want to start by asking you, like, if you can describe your book in a few words to someone who maybe listening and hasn't read your book yet.
Yeah, sure. So my book is titled Tomorrow I Become a Woman, and it begins in 1978, just a few years after the end of the Nigerian Civil War, and less than a decade actually after the Nigerian Civil War ended. And it starts with a young lady meeting the perfect man for her. He's tall, he's charismatic, he's Igbo, exactly what her mother would want, right? And so when a couple of months later, after meeting at church, he asks her to marry him. She says yes, even though she has lingering feelings for someone else who is of a different tribe, who is Yoruba, and her mother would obviously be less approving of that person. And so this book follows her story over the next 20 years. And I didn't mention as well that this person she marries reminds her strongly of her uncle that disappeared during the Nigerian Civil War, her mother's brother. So in a couple of months later, he asks her to marry him. She says yes, even though she has lingering feelings for someone else. And so this book follows her story and her friend's stories over the next 20 years and how their different decisions affect how their lives turn out, and also societal pressure to conform to certain dictates and how each woman reacts to these issues. And so it's a story of love, it's a story of war, it's a story of female friendship. It's a story of perseverance and unwillingness to conform and strength as well. And in many ways, a story of triumph. So that's what it's about. I hope I've been able to cover everything without giving away too much.
Yes, because we don't want it to be spoilers. That was something I was telling myself before this podcast. I was like, I can't ask you to, like, some people have to still read the book and be surprised. Yes, like so the thing I wanted to ask you is, like, what made you want to set it like after you said the book started, like you said, is it 10 I think I believe it was 10 years after the Civil War,
so yeah, 1978,
yeah,
so that's like 8 years
after. So what made you want to set it from that period than say like contemporary 2020 or something? What made you decide to set it in that, from to start from there?
To be quite honest, the original story, like the book flap says, it's loosely based on people I know, right? And these people I know have been through certain circumstances in the course of their marriages. And I felt like some of these things, people will say, oh, it doesn't happen now, So I was like, you know what, let's go back in time. And then also coincidentally, around the same period, I was speaking to a colleague whose grandmother that disappeared during the Nigerian Civil War. And I was really touched by our conversation in that there was a very, I've spoken rather to people that have experienced loss, and there was a very stark difference in this conversation in that when people lose people through disappearance, it's quite different because there's never any closure. There's never, oh, that's the end, because you keep wondering what happened. Did this person die? This person, what happened? And I really wanted to write about that. And that's where the character Uncle Ikenna comes in, who is the main character's uncle that's appeared in Nigerian Civil War, and their search for him over the next 20 years. It was so poignant, and I just told myself, I want to write about this. And so everything just came together, like with the timeline, with, you know, this, and I was like, okay, this will work.
You know, the thing about like the disappearance that you just mentioned is that I feel like with Nigerian history that we study in school, you don't really learn much. It's through your book and from talking to you now that I'm like, oh yeah, people actually disappeared. I think I read your book around the same time that I read, there's another book, Zain Asha. It's nonfiction, but she wrote about like a little bit about Civil War in her book about her mom's life. And she used to talk about Civil War, and I was just like, oh, I didn't know anything about the Civil War at all. I feel like your book and her book were just educating me about the Civil War. And although your book goes beyond the Civil War, there are lots of themes in it. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is, I know you're not Igbo, but your main, most of the characters in the book are Igbo. And the Igbo terms, words, phrases in the book throughout. So I wanted to ask you, like, what made you want to write like an Igbo? What made you, because although like you are addressing like themes like societal pressure, like women, Yoruba women, Edo women will face this. So what made you particularly want to write it from like an Igbo perspective?
When I knew I was writing about someone's disappearance during the Nigerian Civil War, I knew I wanted it to be an Igbo character, because I mean, going by Nigerian history, they were the tribe most affected by the Nigerian Civil War. You know, people died, and it's a very gory history, and I feel like it's not explored enough. And then also, because I'm sure we'll delve into this later, but my background is very, like, accounting, finance, you know. For a while, only my closest friends knew I was writing this book, right? And, like, so a few of my closest friends are Igbo, so I knew that if I had any issues with language, I could always rely on them for help, but my parents are not Igbo, right? So, and I didn't want to start asking my mom or my dad, like, my dad is from Edo State, my mom is Yoruba, and I didn't want to start asking them for, like, and then, like, oh, what are you working on? Well, let me read it, like, because I wasn't even sure at that point what I was going to do with the manuscript. I just knew I wanted to tell this story, right? And so it was very personal, so I was, like, protecting it. Okay. And I didn't want them to also like dissuade me, like, oh, you should focus on your career, blah blah.
No, because I think the part that one thing that crossed my mind was, I was actually going to ask you like how you went about getting, like, you know, the Igbo language if you're not familiar with it, but now that you said you have a few friends that are Igbo, so that kind of helped you. And then there was a part of your book that really resonated with me about, like, well, I call it tribalism in Nigeria, that where you said something about, in society, like, I'm Yoruba, for example, it's okay for me to be friends with Igbos. We all have friends from different ethnic groups. But when it comes to marriage, it's like...
It's a different...
Exactly, you said it. That's when you realize how tribalistic we are.
Like, yes.
So that was... Yeah. And then another thing that you mentioned... about writing, like you said, you have an accounting and finance background. So I want to ask, when did you begin to have an interest in writing? I had friends in secondary school that used to write a lot, like story, what I call it, story. Yeah, they used to write stories and I would read them. So I want to ask, were you like that teenager that was writing stories, or how did writing start for you?
I always say that my writing journey is a bit, should I say, miraculous, or it's because I'd always, to be fair, like, before this, I'd always been a reader. Like, I started reading like really young, and my dad always, not just my dad, both parents encouraged me to read. But then my dad used to like take me out, like, we used to have days when we go book shopping. And I remember when I was like 16 or 17, he was like, I was bugging him about buying more books, and he was like, go write your own, you know. And I remember then, I was like, fam, like, you're disturbing me, go and write, like, you're always reading. And I remember then I told him, oh, I don't have anything to say. And obviously, I was quite young, and now I think back on that moment, I felt like I didn't have anything to say. So, like, we did have writing, like, maybe projects in, you know, school, because I did take literature. And I think that was also very helpful, because we had a wonderful teacher in my school, then Miss Henrietta Ngumizi. So she was very hands-on, very, you know, we enjoyed her class. I mean, at least I did. Let me not speak for everybody else. But to be honest, I never saw myself as much of a writer. in the sense that most of my writing was like nonfiction. If I did write, it was very like factual, maybe essays. So I never saw myself writing fiction until I went for my master's, my MBA at Oxford. And while I was there, I met someone that was going through like a very difficult marriage. And I remember then I tried to convince her to leave the situation, and she didn't. And I remember speaking to someone else as well about this matter, because like, you know, when you feel like, oh, maybe I'm using the wrong words, let me speak to someone else that would have the right words for this person. And the person started giving me the same Nigerian gist of, oh, you're trying to destroy marriage, this and that. And I remember losing it, right? Because it was my friend, and I remember losing it. I was like, I told my friend, I was like, see, I'm going to write about this thing. Like, this thing you're saying is nonsense, you know? Luckily, like, his opinions have evolved since then, right? So till today, he always jokes like, ah, I'm inspired this book. So, because it was basically like an argument to him, and I was like, see, I'm going to write about this thing, you're saying nonsense, because I was so annoyed. So it was just around the same time also. I just felt like I'd known different people for so long that we're just going through, you know, there are just certain things that were expected, things that were overlooked, things that were just considered normal. Like, this shouldn't be normal, you know? I just really wanted to, so when I got back from my MBA, like, I was applying for jobs, and I was trying to do, like, this startup thing that wasn't really working out the way I thought it would when I came back. And so I just had a lot of free time. I just needed something to distract me from, like, applying for jobs, startup that wasn't going so well. And I was like, okay, do you know what? Have this thing. And I remember one day I just opened my laptop, and like, last, even if I write it and nothing comes of it, that's fine. And I just started, and it's kind of insane. It's actually kind of insane. Like, okay, what made me think I could write? Like, who would like to think I could write? But I guess maybe insane self-belief, I don't know. But like, I just started. And so even when my job came, I found it very liberating, and it really just gave me peace. It put me in a very different mindset. Like, there's no other way to say than say it gave me peace. And I just found, like, even as I continued my consulting job and everything, I just continued. And every time I spoke to more people, I heard more stories. Because, you know, at our age, as a young, the things you've heard, you've seen friends that have gotten married, you've seen, you have aunties, you have cousins, you just know people, and you know different stories in different forms. And I just felt like this was a story that I needed. So there were times, I remember, like, sometimes I'll pause in my writing, and my friend would be like, ah, I will have had your book or this thing, like, honestly, because maybe they're telling me something and it's like really paining them, and they're like, it's true, Iwa, that book you're working on, you have to finish it, because this is what we're talking about, you know. And so it was there were just things like that really gingered me to continue. And
I think the themes that you wanted, as someone who has read the book, I feel like those themes that you wanted to put in, I think they came across in the book. Like, the fact that, for example, was it when a friend is advising another friend about how to, like, your marriage, like, this is not good, I think you need to leave, it's not safe or something. Mm-hmm. And then that comes across in the book. And I feel like with fiction, because it's not a book that's advising you, like, 10 steps on how to save your marriage or something. So you're reading the story, and then everybody is interpreting it in their own way, and they're picking what they want to. So I feel like it's very powerful to, like, that. Thank like you. There's a lot to learn from it. I plan to, like, recommend it to, I think, any book that has, like, difficult mother daughter relationships that I feel like Nigerian, I plan to give them to my mom. because I feel like I don't need to talk too much. I don't need to, like, tell my mommy, like, Bobby, I think you need to change your ways. But I just, because she, luckily she likes reading, and she asks me for recommendations. So I plan to give it to her when I see her in a few weeks. Anyway, that's by the way. And then the bit, going back, you said something about, like, you started writing the book while you were, like, looking for jobs, trying to build a startup. So I know you said, like, your parents, you know, you didn't want them to, like, dissuade you. But right now, I know you're now focused on full-time writing, I believe. And so how was that? Because we live in a society that, even though we try to be independent, we still have, like, parents that have opinions about how we choose to live our lives. How has that been in terms of, How was that for you in terms of, like, saying to your parents, like, this is what I'm going to do, and, you know?
Nigerian parents will be Nigerian parents, right? Like, so I can't, it's like I have a degree in accounting, I'm chartered, MBA, all those things. So, of course, like, it's not been easy. When my book deal came through, my mom was very supportive. Initially, she was like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? But I think after like a couple of months and after a while, she was just like, you know what? Like, it's fine, you know? I think my dad is still somewhere. I think he still believes that I'm just like throwing my degree away, you know? I think he still believes that, but he's kind of left it to God because, you know, he's still, so he's not too happy about it. But I mean, there's a certain age that they can't really hold you. Yeah, they can't hold your neck. So like I'm not like, and then once you're not dependent on them, like financially, it also does give you a level of independence actually to say, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to see it through. If it doesn't work out, fine, but it's my life. Let me see it through. So, and I think my parents have like understood that and just accepted it.
That's good. Cause I know like with money, exactly. If you can say, oh, I can feed myself, because most times what they're worried about is like,
finance.
Can you feed you? Yeah.
Like my uncle told me like, I want to be poor, that I'm going to become a rapper. I want to be poor.
So what are the assumptions that you've had to like face as a writer, like the misconceptions that people have about writing?
Oh, there are many. I think one is people think writing is not a serious like job, right? I've always had a lot of respect for writers because I'm a reader, but my respect like tripled once I started writing myself. Like I was like, oh my, this thing is not easy, you understand? But like I always say that I find it hard to be truly truly critical of other people's work. Like I might not like everything, or I might have my own reservations, but I'm always very reluctant to because I now know I know what it takes to write a book, and so I'm sympathetic in that sense. But people think writing is not like when you say, oh, you're a writer, like the look you get, oh, what are you writing? Like, you get what I mean? I feel like if you're talking to a Nigerian, it's very writer. So that's the number one misconception. People think writing is not easy. It's not like you're literally creating, like you're creating something new, like you're like, fam, your head is moving in different directions. You're creating sentences. You're creating structure. You're creating stories. Like, you're moving over the years. See, sometimes you write a sentence, you Google and research just to make sure, like, you have your facts in that. Like, for example, writing this one, like, I had to read on Nigerian Civil War. I listened to first-person accounts from people that lived during that period and experienced. I read first-person accounts as well. Like, see, sometimes even if you're writing 1978 and you want to put radio, you have to make sure that the radio is not the kind of radio that was in 1999. Get that kind of thing. So just things like little, and you don't really realize it until you start writing, because you're like, hey, it's true, this thing was it existing then, you know? And even like for example, the Nigerian national anthem, we didn't switch over to the current one until like I think 1978. And I remember in an earlier draft, it didn't make it to this final draft. An earlier draft, I was like, I literally put in the current national anthem, and then I had to go back and I'd be like, oh my God, it didn't become that until this year. So yeah, so just things like that. Yeah, so that's not one. Number two, I think that's the biggest misconception, like not serious work.
Not serious.
That's the biggest misconception. I think number two is like people think all writers are the same, and that's wrong. But different forms of like writing.
What do you mean by that?
People think like, oh, like so for example, if you say you're a writer, people misunderstand different forms of writing that exist, right? Like obviously there are people that that are into content creation, like create content for like companies, for blogs, they're also writers, right? But sometimes when you say you're a writer, people think, oh, that's the kind of writing that then because I write novels and I'm also doing that, but then that's not true. You understand? It doesn't mean I can do that. It doesn't mean I will do that. You understand? So things like that. And also there's so many genres that people don't know. And people think, for example, someone that is writing mystery, same person as like fam, like you understand, like actually George R.R. Martin and Daniel Steele are not the same people. You understand? Like,
yeah.
But like it's not the same. Writing is very different, you know. And people don't understand that. What else? People don't understand publishing actually. publishing industry is a very different ballgame. And also, I had to learn to understand it myself because that was very much a novice. Like, I Googled my way through publishing. It's a very different ballgame. People don't understand how book deals work. Even writers.
So I would say, with reading, for example, people also look down on that sometimes. They'll be like, oh, so you mean you just open, like, you're reading fiction? Like, people feel like if you're not reading, like, a religious book, like, you must be wasting your time. And I don't know why.
I'm telling you, like, when I meet people that say they don't read fiction, I just laugh. Like, it's just so much you're missing in fiction. I learn so much more from reading fiction because it takes you to places that non-fiction can't take you, because like, you're reading about different parts of the world, different cultures. The number of things I've learned from reading fiction, like the most ridiculous of things I read. See, and it's not just even, oh, I'm reading literary fiction. Even the genre of fiction that you think is not serious, you could pick up something. I remember I always use this as an example. There's this author, Monica McCarthy. A lot of people won't know her, especially except her into romance, but she did this like 12 book series. It was a romance series, but it was basically on Scottish kings and Scottish history and the wars that were fought. And basically, the entire book would be romance. Then at the end of the book, in the author's notes, she would like detail what actually happened, in like which part of the book was true, which part of the book wasn't true. And I could make me go Google, like, oh, how this happened. And just from that book, I learned so much about, like, people might think it's like, oh, what am I doing with that knowledge? But it's something, right? There are countries I've not been to, but I've been to mentally because I've read books about those places, right? And then when you read these books, you go check, like, oh, what else is there? What, you know, it piques your curiosity. It makes you want to know more, expands your mind and expands your imagination as well. You don't just see things plainly, you know? There's so much to learn from fiction, in my opinion. Yeah,
I agree with you. I read more fiction than non-fiction, but I read both. But I would say that with fiction, even I read romance sometimes, and yes, it's for fun, but like the same way we watch Netflix for fun, so like books too can be for fun, and then you still learn things. And also, like, we travel sometimes, we can't afford to travel everywhere. We only have one, like, probably won't go everywhere, so at least with a book you can go there without actually going there.
I agree.
So there's a lot to learn. And another thing, like you mentioned earlier, about like a lot of authors don't know much about publishing. So I just wanted to ask if maybe you could share like one tip, like maybe just something short that can be like a starting point for an author that maybe is trying to like publish their book and they don't know what to do. Like, what would be your advice to them?
Read as much as you can on publishing industry. There's so much information online. You wouldn't believe it, but like, I learned everything about how to get published, how to get an agent, how to query, samples of querying letter. There's so many like blogs and like resources that you wouldn't know like if you don't look for them. Like, there are a lot of people that I'm very kind to put out this information there. So read as much as you can. Don't just start querying people with like random stuff. Read sample query letters. Rewrite and rewrite your query letter until it gets to a good place. There's so much. I think that's just the best advice I'll give. There's so much information available online. Google is probably like a gift to all of us. There's so much. I learned so much. I Googled my way through publishing. I always say that. Yeah. Of course, like, the people kind enough to tell me things, but at the very beginning, I knew nothing. I was just Googling, like, how do people get, like, I literally finished my manuscript and I Googled how to get published. Like, how do people get published?
Like, you finished it and then you said, okay, what's the next step? Which is,
what's the next step? Exactly. I wanted to know. Like, it's not, like, I still knew I had to edit it somehow, but I was like, okay, but then what happens, you know? So
I just asked you about publishing advice. So I was going to ask, what would be your advice to writers? So it could be, like, I recently started a newsletter, like, a month ago. I don't know why. But, like, what would be your advice to anyone who writes? Because sometimes it can be very hard to, like, put your work out there because people are, like, your book, for example, is out in the world. People are writing different things about it on Instagram. So a lot of us are very sensitive about our work. So what would be your advice to anybody, a writer, a creative, who's afraid to put out their work? What would you say to them?
So it depends on the form you want to put out your work in. I think I start from that. If it's like maybe you want to put it on a blog or a newsletter, do you know what? I would say, to be honest, my advice to any writer is start somewhere. Like, you always improve, but you can't improve by not writing. So if you think, okay, I suck right now, if you think, because a lot of times we're harsh on ourselves, you may not even be as bad as you think you are, right? If you think, okay, I suck right now and I'm not putting out anything, but then there's no way you're going to improve. No one's going to be like, oh, maybe change this, address this, improve this. I remember book-wise, my guilty pleasure is romance novels. And I remember there was this particular author I really liked years ago. And I remember one day, because she's been writing since like the 80s. And once, like, I've only read maybe from the 90s. And one day I went to go and look for her very first book. And almost the things I saw, I said, hey, is it the same author? But imagine if she had stopped, right?
Yeah.
Like, imagine if she had stopped. And to be honest, at that point, my book was not out. But I can't even lie to you, that endangered me. I was like, ah, her first book was not perfect. So me too. Ooh, you understand? It's still possible. Because you keep improving. A lot of authors will tell you, oh, they don't open their first book. They don't look at their first book. Because even though you, the right reader, might would think, ah, this person tried though. Most people don't like their first work. I'm sure a couple of years from now, if you show me my book, I'll be like, ah, please. but honestly, if you don't continue, there's no way to improve. And just be open to feedback. Don't take it too, like, don't tie it to your chest too much. Like, I think one thing that really helped me, I would say, was, like, I worked in consulting. I always say that I worked in consulting. And why do I say that? Because in consulting, you will work on a project for 2 weeks and you meet the manager for 30 minutes and the person will cancel everything that you use your 2 weeks and your whole life to do, and you will want to cry. So to be honest, so when I get feedback, like, for example, my editor says, oh, we should change this or we should change that. I just want to know the reason. Like, if you're telling me, oh, this, I'm like, okay. And I do it. Like, because I just try not to, I try to see it as, like, oh, this is my consulting work. This is like a job. So if they're saying I need to, you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. So obviously, I'm at the publishing end, but then even if your friend says, if like someone, because not every feedback is good feedback. Some people are just nasty. Some people are not helpful. Some people don't get what you're writing. So your book will never be for everyone, right? Or whatever you're working on will never be for everyone, even if it's a short story. But good advice will always resonate. You would know if it's good advice. And so if you feel this person is giving you genuine advice, or this person is saying something that you need to work on, or is highlighting a fault that resonates, it will resonate. Like, so there's one of our professors here, and basically she says, like it will resonate inside, you know, and you know that, okay, do you know what? But then if it doesn't resonate, or if you feel resonate does not mean, oh, it's not like it was. So sometimes people say, oh, it doesn't resonate because the advice is harsh. It doesn't necessarily mean it won't be harsh, especially if you're Nigerian, we're very rude people. But honestly, if it's genuinely good advice, take a listen and just see what you can pick from it. I remember the first draft I had, my very, very first draft. It's like I wrote like 10 chapters. And I remember, if you're a good reader, mm-hmm. you kind of know it. Like, almost this thing, know too. You understand? Like, he has, I keep saying you understand. Like, you just know that this thing is not there yet too. Yeah. So I remember I sent it to my friend. One person came back with like really just, it's okay. Like, didn't really have any negative feedback. But I just knew that this thing still wasn't. So I sent it to like my other friend, and she came back with like honest feedback, right? Mm-hmm. Like really honest feedback. Like, and she was like, see, you're not describing enough, you're not this, you're not that. And I could have literally thrown that manuscript away and just let it go. But I knew it was honest and genuine feedback. And said something like, okay, who do you like, right? And yeah, that's another advice I'll give you, right? I'd never stop reading. She's like, okay, who do you like reading? Mm-hmm. Like, whose work would you say you're most trying to emulate? Pick up that person's book and see what the person is doing. And for me, that's what I did. I just kept doing. So now when I hear, like, maybe an author is really good or something, I'm always like, oh, let me see what this person is writing. Doesn't necessarily mean I'll like it, though, because there are some I read that, like, what is this book they're shouting about? But okay, congratulations to the person. I think, yeah, always just don't take it too personally. Like, some people are mean, honestly. Personally, I'll be honest with you, like, I've not sat down and gone through my Goodreads. Mm-hmm. It might sound weird, but I've not, because I just, like, I'm like, it's out in the world. Everybody interprets it differently. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not, like, I can't pull it back now, except that you get it. So I'm not going to bother myself. I'm not going to bother myself with that. Like, because, But that's different from like actual feedback of, oh, change this, improve this, do this, do that. But then all those maybe nasty comments online, don't need to focus on that kind of negativity. Because some people are just negative. Like I've read books I really enjoyed, and I saw some of the comments online, and I was like, now, oh, is this person owing you money? So that kind of, like, why are you so mean? So, but genuine, honest feedback, right, from people you trust, always value it. So I hope I didn't spend too much time talking.
That's helpful, like, about feedback, because sometimes it can be difficult knowing which one to accept, but I think the way you described it has been good. The thing you said was about, like, authors that you like to go back and read their work. So, like, when you were trying to improve your writing, what, like, the authors that whose work that you enjoy?
So, like, I'll be honest, I knew, like, I was writing from an African perspective, so I really wanted to read, like, African, particularly Nigerian authors whose work I felt really embodied to a very large extent what I wanted to do. So I read Americana so many times that I read Americana a lot of times. I love that book. Everyone talks about Half of a Yellow Sun. Half of a Yellow Sun is great, but see, Americana, that's a good book. I love the writing in that. I read a lot of Americana. Who else? There's this author, she's American. She's called Brie Bennett. She has this book, The Mothers, yes, and Vanishing Half. I really like her writing. So, and for me, I look for authors whose writing kind of resonate what I'm trying to do. So I really liked reading hers. Of course, there's Chinua Achebe and co. Their writing is sort of different, but there's an ease with which Chinua Achebe wrote that also resonates with me, and still now. I still even as I was traveling here, I still came with my copy of No Longer at Ease. Who else? So I have a lot of authors I like. So authors I like and authors that their work is very
well. I think the ones you shared a few. So
okay, that's fine. Sorry. Okay, thank
but,
you.
But like, I also wanted to ask, like, because those are the ones that resonate with you. So we're coming to the end of the podcast. So I just wanted to like wrap up by asking, like, what have you read recently that you've enjoyed?
But the title of the book is Sugar Bean.
Is what? Sorry.
Sugibane. I don't know if you've read it. Sugibane. It's basically this young boy's struggle. It's about the boy, because that's the title, Sugi. Mm-hmm. But his mother is actually the main character in the book, and she basically swallows up all the space with her personality. But she, so it's during the 80s when a lot of ship docks closed, and the mines as well closed. A lot of families north of England struggled financially. So it shows this boy struggle in a working class family with an alcoholic mother, and you know, just in Scotland and all the terrible circumstances around that, and it just really shows working class like life. But the writing is just. Well, the writing that book is heavy. It's really heavy. Like it, you feel it, and the writing is done really well. I think he won the Booker Prize. I think in 2020.
Okay.
So I'd heard so much about him. I really just wanted to give it a shot, and writing is really good. I'm hoping to pick up his second book came out in April. I'm hoping to pick that up as well once I get the chance to do that. So I've been experimenting a lot. So I've been reading a lot of fantasy because I'm trying to like experiment with my writing. So anything else I mention will probably be fantasy.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and then and also I'm reading a lot more of Toni Morrison. I'm currently reading Beloved. So I mean, she's Toni Morrison for a reason, right?
Yeah. I haven't read any like Toni Morrison or any. I think I just feel like it'll be too advanced for me. I think I won't understand it. Oh.
No, you should. No. Her writing isn't like complex or anything. I think you should try Beloved. Beloved. I think start with Beloved.
Okay.
I think that's like the start with Beloved. That's a really good one. Okay. I don't think I've heard anybody say anything bad about Beloved. That's a really good one.
Okay, maybe I'll...
No, her writing is not.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't throw big words out or anything like that. It's just like, it's literary fiction, but it's good. It's really good.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to you said you're writing at the moment. So that means we're expecting like a book, not soon, but no pressure, but at some point in the future. So like, can you like share a little bit about, like you're willing to share about what you're writing at the moment and what we can expect maybe sometime in the future?
Oh yeah, of course. So I'm writing a follow-up book to Tomorrow I Become a Woman. And in this book, I want to explore, I don't know if you recall their daughters' names, but, you know, Ego, who is Uju's daughter, mm-hmm. Zina, who is Oda's first daughter, and then Ebife, who is Chinegu's first daughter. I want to explore their lives and how their mother's decisions are packed and their own decisions over the course of their lives. I don't want to give away too much, mm-hmm. but in writing it, I was very keen on the subject of trauma, mm-hmm. And I always say that a significant percentage of the people will become is determined at birth. Mm-hmm. So it's not something like the fact that I read a lot because I was born to my father and I was born to my mother. Like if I was probably born to a different couple, I might not be, you know, and I probably would not have even thought of venturing into writing. So there's so much I shape just by birth. Of course, like, I'm not saying people cannot change the course of their lives or anything. That's not what I'm trying to say. But what I'm trying to say is there's so much the lottery of birth plays and our own trauma and our own decisions, like based on our parents' experiences and things we want to do, how sometimes certain people tend to run away from that. Like, I don't want to be like this person. Some people, it's the other way. You're trying so hard to be like this person, trying to, you know, and then it affects how you make your decisions. And so, you know, Tomorrow I Become a Woman, we see how these three women's lives play out, right? Yeah. Over 20 years. And I want to explore, okay, these three women, these very distinct women and very distinct approach to societal pressure and societal expectations. And at the end of Tomorrow I Become a Woman, you read it, so you see how everyone ends, you know, how does that impact their own children? Does Ego's daughter look at Uju's daughter look at Uju and say, this is what I want to do, this is not what I want to do? And then also you got to explore a bit of Nigerian politics and over the last 20 years as well. Just different things. I don't want to give away too much, but I'm pretty excited. So that's actually what I'm working on right now.
We'll be looking forward to it, like, no pressure. No, because I assume, like, you know when you write your first book, and then I've never written a book, but from what I've seen, like, if your book, you know, people are sharing it, then it's like, you're like, will the second one match or even surpass the reception that you've gotten, because you feel like that. I don't know if that's what you're experiencing at the moment.
So I'd read about that before, right? Mm-hmm. So what I did was, like, I tried to have a draft out, like, ready before this book came out. So, like, I wouldn't have that pressure, like, based on, like, reviews. So I had a draft ready. Now I'm obviously having a first draft and the eventual thing are two different things, right? But at least I have something I'm working with. So, yeah. And also, like, I think what I tried to do, like people were like, oh, how do you feel about being published? I'm like, to be honest, I didn't think too much about it. Because I feel it's when you think a lot about it that you now become so, maybe it's because I'm not like on TV or something, on BBC or anything. I really tried not to think about it. Like I said, I didn't go to Goodreads to read, like, the comments. Like, it's real. It's when people tag me on Instagram, I see, aww, and then I post, right?
Yeah.
So and I'm like, oh, thank you, this is nice, you know. Luckily no one has tagged me on anything nasty yet. I hope it doesn't happen. No, but like, so when you, like, kind of live that way, it's easy not to think about it. Like, you get it. Like, I think someone tagged me in the comment. It wasn't nasty. It just had, like, a bit of criticism, mm-hmm. around, like, I think how I handled Uncle Ikenna's story and if, mm-hmm. the storyline was necessary or this or that. And I just took it like, okay, everybody has their own opinion. But nothing really got. And to be honest, the rest of the person's review on Instagram was very flattering and nice. So I still told the person, thank you. But nobody has tagged me. But to be honest, I just try not to think too much about it. Like, it's out. We bless God, you know. I'll remove, exactly. Because why you get so, because it's very easy to get so I've seen authors that read every comment and then internalize. When you now start internalizing people's comments, whether praise or disgust or anything, I feel that's when, because you're like, hey, these people have praised me. I have to mix it. So, you know, my next book. But like, obviously, I'm not saying I'm writing rubbish, but I do want it to be better than my first. But I'm not thinking too much about it. But that's the best answer I can give.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed the episode, please share it with one friend. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast newsletter. There you'll get little tidbits from me as well as recommendations of other podcasts that I've enjoyed. So definitely subscribe to that. And thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.